Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Fan Morning Show, J.D. Blake and Ailish, Sportsnet 590 The Fan. One of our favorites, John Morosi, MLB Network Insider. He joins us now. Good morning, John. Thanks for joining us, man.
I am a great fan of the program. Love listening to you guys. I thought you had a great conversation this week with Carlos Pena. That was some really good breakdown of Vladdy's swing. I love that.
Thanks, man. And well, let's start there then with Vladdy's weekend. Is we have accepted now that despite our efforts as baseball fans in this country and in the city, because it is very different here, right? Like, we always look at the Jays through a national lens of they're a national team. But the sport is not national in the sense of through the states of nobody cares tonight about Shohei versus Vladdy, right? Like, this is not a thing where people down south or anybody that's not specifically watching MLB Network content is going to care about this. Like, if you live in Minnesota, you're watching Devin Smeltzer tonight versus Daniel Lynch. You're not watching Hyunjin Ryu versus Shohei Ohtani, correct?
Well, I mean, this is a pretty cool matchup, though. I realize it's not quite the same luster because Vladdy hasn't played this year like the MVP candidate that he was a year ago. But I think anytime Ohtani pitches, we're watching. I mean, that's how I feel, at least. Now, I'm a baseball guy, of course, but he still, and I think in general, the way the Angels have played this year, it's making a very interesting test case out of all those people who have said for a long time, well, Trout will become more of a national American celebrity when he's on a good team, because, of course, he hasn't played in the playoffs since 2014. So it's a very interesting test case. I'm not sure that his Q rating is any higher now than it was a year ago from a standpoint of Trout, but I do think with Ohtani, he has validated a lot of the hype surrounding him with some incredible outings. I mean, he had that great day at Fenway Park earlier this year. So the Angels, I think, collectively are a fun story, even if you're not necessarily an Angels fan.
Yeah, I think they're fun. I just have always wondered what a casual baseball fan, someone who watches their team locally, always feels like that's more the sport to me.
Right.
Like, you know, you watch shows on whether it's ESPN or whatever, south of the border. There's like, you can have a debate about Jimmy Butler, and it feels like there's never a debate on Shohei Ohtani or a discussion on Shohei Ohtani that's national other than, should we be watching more of this guy? And the answer is always yes, but he plays for the Angels, and it's at 10 o'clock at night, and it's usually after the Eastern courses or the East Coast has watched 3 hours of their baseball team, and they're like, yeah, I'm going to go to bed now. I'll see this guy pitch when we see his team. Sometimes you don't. I love watching Ohtani. I think that there's like a strong case that he is the greatest athlete on planet Earth right now. And yet it's like he's kind of buried. But I'm very over the whole, like, can Mike Trout be the face of baseball thing? Like, he's incredible. His manager is talking about how he's in awe of him. But yeah, this is what it comes down to, John, for those two guys is, can they have big playoff moments? Because that's the only time that all of us decide to actually watch a baseball team that isn't our own and have an investment in it.
I think you're right, JD. And to me, I go back and we talk about in the last 30 years, I still think sort of the greatest American baseball star to the masses has been Derek Jeter. And the part of the secret with him was from the moment he showed up to the major leagues, he was on our television sets every October without fail for the first basically all but 1 year of his career. And that's a pretty amazing thing to be able to say. He obviously has always been there and was excelling in those moments, and he's a Yankee and all those different reasons for his celebrity and what he means in American culture. But I think you're right that baseball, and maybe the sport is moving in that direction on some level. It's about embracing what you are as a sport and what you do well. And I think you're right that we as baseball people, we don't often find ourselves in the middle of a debate about players. You know, forever you could debate, to your point, Brady and Manning. It's just we don't really have that in terms of a national debate about a particular player or team. But there's still a way for the sport to be incredibly fun and enduring. And I do think the game actually still has pretty good participation levels here in the States at the youth levels, where the game from a playing standpoint is still very strong. So I'm generally an optimist, as you know, through our conversations over the years, but it's you're right. I think baseball, and I think collectively it hasn't continued trying to be more like football, because it's not. And so I think there's a lot of wisdom in knowing who you are, and I think baseball at the marketing level knows who it is right now.
John, in terms of baseball at the marketing level, you look at, obviously, the Angels, you know, they have the West Coast issue. They have Trout and Ohtani are two of the most must-watch guys. But realistically, if Major League Baseball was going to, whether explicitly or just kind of subconsciously, attach its marketing muscle to a team that could get kind of national consciousness, on paper, heading into the season, that was the Blue Jays, a young team with a bunch of sluggers, a high personality team, a lot of guys who do funny things in the dugout. They're great for social and stuff like that. Obviously, the Jays struggling or being disappointing is bad for a lot of baseball reasons. Do you think there's a bit of a missed opportunity here to become like kind of a league favorite had they been playing better, had they been playing up to their standards, given that they're going to get eyeballs on them sometimes with games against the Yankees and games against the Red Sox?
I think that's a fair point, and obviously we had our third showcase game of the season on MLB Network when I was in New York was a Blue Jays-Yankees game. It was actually the day after Vladdy's three-homer game, so it felt like we were in the middle of the biggest story in baseball, which was fun at that point. And I think they still have a chance to get back there. It's a very interesting team to think about, because the names still all look great, and you start to ask yourself, if you were going to make a move and shake things up, and there's not really a natural move to make. It is a collective issue right now of their offense just not working, and that, by the way, it's not unique to them. There's a lot of different teams that I follow now that I watch, and they're not quite offensively where they expected to be. Now, the baseball could be part of it, and we're wondering if maybe that will change a little bit as the weather warms up. Will the ball behave differently? I mean, that's one question. But I also think that just the ability of players to make adjustments that help their teams just get a runner on base and move the line, we're just not seeing it, and it's not unique to the Blue Jays. This is an issue around the game where players have their approach and are fairly rigid in it and are not really taking advantage of what the defense is giving them in a shift or other things. So I think that, to me, is one question I've got for the Jays is, will you make an adjustment? And if you don't make an adjustment, what does the end state of this team look like? Do you just hope that the ball travels more, that you get an extra 10 feet out of your fly balls in the summer months, and that solves the problem? But if it doesn't, where do you go? And I think that, to me, is the big question for this team, because they've been the overall story for them has been quite the performance, the numbers, the record, they've all been pretty average. This has been a pretty average team. And they can be so much more than that, especially when you look at how good their pitching has been. So I think the next few weeks will sort of tell the tale about if they plan to make an adjustment or if they just hope that the circumstances of the game make the adjustment for them. But I think a lot of the things you touched on with Carlos this week were very, very prescient, because I think that really gets at the heart of the issue right now for the Blue Jays.
Yes, 100%. And I'm actually optimistic about baseball in general too, John. I think that some of the advantages of the sport right now are incredible from a local level. Like, if you look at the NBA, they can't get their star players to play in games. In baseball, you have 162 where a guy gets a day off and it's a big story, right? There's an intimacy to baseball that is different than other sports, and I think that is growing again. I think that it's a really great sport for gambling purposes. Like, I think it's really fun to gamble, and that's becoming a bigger and bigger part of, like, just professional sports and the way that we view them as fans and the way that we get eyeballs. But yeah, like, you spend 162 games with a team that's fun, and you remember that team differently than, you know, a football team that went 10-6. Like, it just, it does. It hits completely different. The investment level with them, the care level with them is, it's just more local, it's more personal, and I think that that breeds its own thing, even if it isn't national. That's it, is you're so used to spending time with your team, you don't have time for the other teams. It's like a weirdly good thing if baseball embraces who it is. But I love what you just said there about where do the changes come, right? Because this is kind of what I've been just curious about from the beginning of the offseason. It's like, it really does seem like they missed out on Jose Ramirez, that they really thought that they had a good crack at this guy. The reporting there is pretty sound on they had these frameworks. They'd worked on it going all the way back to last season, and they didn't get the guy. There were some rumors about Schwarber. I had heard that the Jays made a pretty competitive offer, but Philly just went completely over the top with it. They said, you know what, we're getting this guy. He's coming here. And it seems like the Jays really wanted this lefty power bat that could give their lineup some versatility. They didn't land him. And then all of a sudden you end up in a season where your bats are really struggling. And I go, okay, you're right, John. Like, is the plan really for the 10 feet of fly balls? Probably. Is it for some positive regression? Absolutely. But my biggest curiosity point is, like, how desperate do you think these guys get in season in terms of pursuing a bat like that? Like, do you think that it's going to end up being a scenario where Toronto goes, hey, someone like that is available, whatever, we're going to pay up on the price? Or is it something where they go, hey, we're actually pretty young, maybe we don't have it this year, let's continue to work on this as an off-season thing and try to work around the fringes, add closer to what they did last year, which is a Corey Dickerson type. I know that's not like a sexy name, but it's what happened last year, and move forward when the right deal becomes available. Like, is it desperate already in season, or has it like shifted a little bit where you actually have kind of turned down the patience of this core, given that there's more playoff teams, you still are young, there is a runway with this group, et cetera, et cetera?
I think it's more of the latter. I don't think that we'll see a dramatic move for a superstar player in season. You're right that they are very short on impactful left-handed bats. I think that to me is probably the most obvious issue that they've had. They've obviously tried Tapia, they've tried Zimmer, they've tried Collins at different times during the course of the year. Cavan struggled so much and then was sent down. There's not balance. And I think this team, and this is where I think there was wisdom in their pursuits of Schwarber and Ramirez, when they struggle, and I'm sure every Blue Jays fan will nod when I say this, when they struggle as an offense, a lot of the at-bats look the same. The at-bats look the same because the approach is quite the same. They're all right-handed, and if they're either rolling over balls right now the way Vladdy is or striking out or popping up, there's just a lot of unfulfilling at-bats right now. And it's this, with the exception of obviously the most recent game, but it's and they look the same. And that's the part of it that I think frustrates fans is they say, I'm just seeing the same at-bats all the time. What's going on here? And I think it's a reasonable statement. But then you look at the roster and say, well, where are you going to make the change? You brought in Chapman with great fanfare. You're not going to move on from him after 2 months. Bo is part of the future. He's struggling this year by his standards. At least he's not being his full self. But you have to, I think, give him time to work through it. Maybe the one spot is you would change out either a DH or one of your corner outfield guys. But it's just, to me, it's not as easy of a fix because we have to kind of ask ourselves where would that change happen? Where would that player be that you'd bring in? And I think it probably would be a corner outfielder more than likely if you had to. But I also don't think this team is necessarily one player away and one move away from being a World Series team right now. I really don't think that Juan Soto is walking through that door this year. I mean, if we can think about it and talk about it, and maybe on some level there's a fit. Obviously, he's one of the best left-handed hitters in the world.
Oh, there's a fit. There's a fit. You'll make a fit.
The question is A, does Juan Soto save the season? B, is it realistic from a prospect standpoint, and see, is it worth giving up Martinez and or Moreno to help what is candidly just right now an okay team. I mean, that's what they are right now. They are collectively a decent baseball team with a really good rotation and a fairly mediocre offense. And I don't know if that team is good enough to validate the price that you'd have to pay to get Juan Soto. I mean, the Nationals have great scouts, and they know that a lot of the guys that we're talking about, at least at the major league level, aren't hitting right now. And so they know how desperate the Jays would be for a lefty bat, and they also know that the players they'd be getting back, if it's a Gurriel, he's not having a good season. So it's just a very interesting question that I'm sure we'll be talking about a lot for the next couple of months.
Hey, John, that's a really great answer. There was a lot there that I'm going to be able to build off of for other segments, and I'm going to reference. So you just feel free to text me if you feel like I've misquoted you at any point when I reference that answer, like in other shows down the line and in other interviews. Okay, like
you got
Yeah, that's 100% going to end up happening, because yes, I agree with a lot of what you just said. So, but you said it is, hey, the same approach keeps happening, and yes, some of that is just lineup, what they have in the lineup, right? Like that you cannot really change. But some of it is, you look at a team, I made this reference the other day, it's the teacher analogy, right? When one student is failing, it's on the student. When the whole class is failing, it's kind of on the teacher. And right now, basically all of the Blue Jays bats are failing. And I do wonder if this kind of continues over the next couple of weeks, what the conversation is like surrounding the manager. Do you think there will be pressure on Charlie Montoyo over the next couple of weeks if the Jays bats continue on this trajectory?
And that's only natural. I think that's pressure on the manager and the coaching staff is, I think, a reality when you enter the season with high expectations. And I think that by the same token, we have to also consider where the front office's understanding on this is. And if when you think about the hitting coach, Guillermo Martinez, and his staff, I'm sure they're giving this information to the hitters. And this is where communication is, as we know, a two-way street, and there has to be an understanding there of what adjustments are actionable, what can change, what does the front office believe is being shared to the players, and I think hitting coaches are not sufficiently credited when things go well. And they are often blamed in a very outsized manner when things are not going well. Guillermo Martinez knows everything we're talking about and things in like 100 times the specificity of what we're talking about right now, because they have all the information, all the video, all the ability to tell Matt Chapman ways that he can get hits. And ultimately, it's up to the players. And that's where I think the approach and I will say collectively around the major leagues, the stubbornness of hitters is at an all-time high in terms of this is my approach, this is what I have to do to get my numbers, my power numbers, and I'm going to stick to this approach. And you see it every time that there's a shift and there's one player on the left side of the infield and there's not a button put down or there's not a change in approach. It's frustrating, but this is not breaking news to the Blue Jays. I mean, their front office knows all of this, and they've been sharing this information with the players. And at some point in time, I think Ross Atkins and Mark Shapiro are very reasonable people, and they will probably look at it and say, do I really think that Charlie or Guillermo has to be held accountable when they're giving the players all the information that we say that they should be given, and the adjustments aren't happening? I think that is the vexing situation, I think, for the front office of the Jays. And by the way, many other front offices of many other teams that I watch play right now as I travel the country and work on these broadcasts. This is not a problem that's unique to the Blue Jays.
You be safe as you travel that country and you watch these teams, John, and we'll catch up with you soon. Thanks for making time, buddy.
Sounds great. Always my pleasure. Keep up the great work on the show. You guys do a great job. Thanks so much.
Take care, pal. That's John Morosi of MLB Network. There's a lot there that I want to kind of build off of on later segments, but I think that what he touched on is kind of my – it's not yet June. It's soon to be June, but it's something that I've been thinking about with the lefty bat conversation is right now these guys don't feel one bat away. the bullpen needs a lot of work, and they need a lot better from their offense. And there are some of these guys that are frankly going to need to prove it throughout the season, and there's a long time before the deadline, so this could shift, right? I'm not putting this take in stone. I don't think John is either. But I would have thought coming into this year, if this was the scenario, that come trade deadline time, whatever lefty bat was available, Jays would have gone out and said, we're getting that guy. As long as it's on-base percentage lefty bat, we're paying the price. Kind of similar-ish to Berríos last year, where they went, we need another starting pitcher. This is the best guy available. We'll go over top of the market with prospects, and we'll get this guy and then give him a contract extension. He fits the timeline, blah, 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 blah. I'm less convinced that's the case. I'm a little bit more in the camp of this team might need another offseason. They might be a little further than we thought. And honestly, that's still okay given the age of some of their superstar players. With that, it's now time for Something to Chew On, brought to you by Great Canadian Meats. Yum, yum, yum.
Yum, yum, yum.
So, yes, JD, I think you're right in terms of there's still a lot of work to be done relative to what we may be expected here. And one of the, especially with the bullpen, and something I want to talk to John about next time we have him on, or talk to other industry people is, hey, has the shift to an extra playoff team, has that adjusted what we're looking at in terms of timelines for sellers' willingness to sell and things like that? So, because if that's the case, then we're looking at, well, there's not a market for a little bit, and you can't really just go another month or two without being able to help your team. One of the areas you could look is your own minor league system. So I recently, in prep for like a prospect segment, did a kind of swing through the Jays minor leagues to see if maybe there could be bullpen help on the way. I have some bad news in terms of guys who are on the 40-man. Hagen Danner, down in Double-A, not pitching that well. Bowden Francis, in Triple-A, not pitching very well. Anthony Kay, Triple-A, not pitching very well. Casey Lawrence, pitching fine as a starter in AAA, but we've seen what that looks like out of the bullpen, and it's not a lot. Thomas Hatch has been bad overall. He did just throw six innings of no-hit ball last week, so maybe he's turning a corner. But the name I keep coming back to, and I know that you've heard me bring this name up, but he had another dominant performance yesterday where his changeup, or the screwball, if you want to call it that, is absolutely unhittable, is Adrian Hernandez. He's rocketed through, not rocketed through because he's been in the system for a while, but he's already on his second level this year, and we're in May. He's pitched 12 innings for the Buffalo Bisons. He has 18 strikeouts and an ERA under one. The complicating factor here is that he's not on the 40-man, so you'd have to lose someone off the 40-man if you decided you wanted to call him up. Whether
Trent
Thornton or a Casey Lawrence
Anthony
or something like that.
Don't lose Anthony Kay, Yeah, if they lose
also
Anthony Kay, I don't know how the fan base will ever recover financially from that. Like, you know, it's like, come on, what are we doing here? Bring the kid up. I already trust, Blake, what you just said, right. I trust him more than Jimmy Garcia. Like, he's the setup man. He's striking out
almost half of the batters he faces. 47.1% strikeout rate. He's cut the walk rate down from previous years, which was always a big concern with him. And then look, we talk about guys who have difficult deliveries and how many bullets you might have in that arm. He's 5'8" and throws with a weird release on that changeup. I don't know how long Adrian Hernandez is going to be able to throw like that without needing some mechanical tweaks or surgery or something like that. You never know. He's only 22, so it might be too fast, but he's also Rule 5 eligible after this season. So you're going to have to add him to the 40-man by the end of the year anyway. I want to see Adrian Hernandez in the majors. This is something to chew on. I know it's a low-leverage one, a 22-year-old who could potentially give you some sixth and seventh inning work, but the Jays bullpen needs some extra arms in the sixth and seventh inning who can miss some bats and make a difference on the mound instead of just giving you the old, hey, 350 ERA. Let's take a break. That's something to chew on. When we come back, we're going to talk to Jalen Harris, a former Raptors guard who will debut in the CEBL tonight for the Scarborough Shooting Stars. That's next on The Fan Morning Show, Sports at 590 The Fan.
Unrivaled insight, analysis, and opinions on all things Blue Jays. Blair and Barker. Be sure to subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Fan Morning Show, Sports at 590, The Fan, Blake Murphy, Ailish Forfar, JD Bunkus. Give them a follow at their names on social and subscribe to this podcast, The Fan Morning Show, wherever you get it. There's a little J. Cole on the way in. It's Cole's world tonight as the Scarborough Shooting Stars of the CBL get underway. He's been in training camp with them. We've heard positive things. We got the chance yesterday to talk with Jalen Harris, former number 59 pick from the Raptors, spent his rookie year between the Raptors and the 905, and this past year playing in Italy. We got the chance to talk to him about the fact that he signed with the Scarborough Shooting Stars, the fact that he's now playing with J. Cole, and what his NBA future might look like. Here is that interview from yesterday.
Very pleased to be joined by former Raptors guard, and now Scarborough Shooting Stars shooting guard. It's Jalen Harris. What's up, man? How we doing?
Hey, what's going on? I'm doing good. How about yourself?
Okay, I'm doing well. I mean, it's not every day that a league signs a former NBA player, a guy who was just drafted in the NBA, and it's the second story because one of the biggest names in all of hip-hop signed there the day before. I gotta ask you, man. Like, I think that you've been practicing probably with J. Cole. Word is that he's already here, like he's already in training camp. Is it? You got to be like a little starstruck hooping with J. Cole. Like, it's got to be like, are you passing the ball a little bit more? Like, what is the dynamic there?
No, it's a good guy. He, you know, a real genuine, real humble guy. You know, I grew up listening to him, so of course, I have a lot of respect for what he does and his industry. You know, the success that he's had, but you know, he's a worker. And so we've been in there every day in training camp. He's been here. He's been, you know, he comes in, gets individual work with me. And, you know what I mean? And it's just been a good process with him so far.
Do you word it like that to him, though? Because I feel like, hey, I grew up listening to you. That's like if you had told Kyle Lowry, hey, I grew up watching you play. And he would have been like, whoa, 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 whoa. I'm not that old. Don't age me like that. Is he cool about that?
Yeah. He's real cool. He's real down to earth, you know, so it wasn't too big of a thing.
See, the biggest one for me is, like, do you guys play his music in the locker room? Like, do you play his music in warm-ups? Like, hey, what's the balance of, like, hey, we don't want to sound like we're only playing your stuff, but we do want to make it sure that, like, we are your fan. Like, if he drops something new, you guys have to have it playing. People have to already be up on it. Like, I don't know when it gets played.
Yeah, I you know, I try to play not around him as much, you know what I mean? I try to keep that side of things, you know, on his yeah, side of the world, I mean. But you know, I definitely blast him when he's not around, though, for sure.
So you guys have already been out for training camp and got a little bit of time together. How's he looking? Like, what's he looking like out there? We're excited to see him, and obviously tickets skyrocketed actually when we saw that he had signed. So clearly some hype around it, but right. How's he looking?
Mm-hmm. No, it looks good. It looks good. You know, you can tell he's been putting in the work and that, you know, he really enjoys the process, enjoys what he's doing. You know, he brings kind of that same level of professionalism towards basketball as he does anything else. You know, he wants to get better and he wants to learn. So, you know, he's out there, he's working, he's, you know, and he looks good.
So for yourself, Jalen, you're coming off that year in Italy with Cremona, and you got to play with old pal Malcolm Miller out there. I know that mm-hmm. that season didn't go as well as you guys wanted as a team, but what is your goal coming back here to the CBL and using this kind of off-season to continue your own personal development and maybe look for the next basketball opportunity?
First and foremost, you know, I was thankful to be out there in Italy. It was a great experience overall, you know, got to experience completely different culture, you know, but coming back over here, you know, my goal is the same thing as it's always been. That's the win, you know, that's number one, first and foremost. I, you know, I love this group of guys that we got from the front office down to the, you know, to the last player, you know what I mean? I think we're really excited. I think we compete and, you know, I want us to go out there and show off that, you know, what we can do in this league. You know, it's a first-year team, and, you know, for myself, you know, I want to be able to be a leader, be able to lead this team, you know, do what I can to help everybody, make everybody else better, and, like I said, come out with the wins.
Mm-hmm. So, Jalen, obviously this last year has been a different one for you than maybe what you expected coming off your NBA rookie year. The reason you were in Italy and maybe not with the Raptors is that you were disqualified by the NBA for the season. What has the last year been like for you from a personal perspective and from a professional perspective navigating this?
It's been a process for sure. You know, like you say, not the way that you would expect your second year to go. But you know, going through it, I just look at it like anything else in life. You know, another obstacle, and you know, I face it head on. You know, I go into it, I try to go through it, go around it, however I got to, you know, to get to the next spot. And so, you know, for me, I take that approach on and off the court. You know, this whole situation, this obstacle, is not new to me in the sense of, like, you know, my whole life I've had obstacles. And so, you know, I just look at it as another one of those, you know, being able to just power through, and, you know, it just makes you better on the other side.
I'm sure there's been a lot of, like, self-contemplation as something like this has happened. And you said that it's an obstacle. It's something that, you know, you will try to work around. But did you learn anything about yourself this year? Like, again, it's such a different experience. Like Blake just outlined, like, ended up, like, you know, going to Europe and having to do all these different things. And yeah, it's probably felt like so much of a whirlwind where you've had all these things packed in. But about yourself personally, like, was there anything that you went, wow, like, this is a real area of growth for me now?
I think maturity-wise, I think, you know, mentally, especially, and even emotionally, like, it was a process. It wasn't easy. It wasn't, you know, going through, you know, the things that I went through, and considering everything that went down. Like, it wasn't the easiest thing, but I learned that, you know, at the end of the day, like, I'm stronger for it. You know what I mean? I feel more mature. I feel more emotionally mature towards things. I feel like I know how to handle situations better, how to, you know, push through certain obstacles and get through different things that maybe before I wasn't as mature to handle, you know. And so I feel like, you know, I have a lot of faith in the man above. And so I feel like he puts these things in front of me just for, you know, to better you. And so I, you know, I feel like that's the thing that I feel like came out of it the most.
So, Jalen, I know that through the league's drugs of abuse program, you had the option to have access to some resources through whether it's the league or the MBPA. Were you able to have contact with the Raptors throughout the last year as well, or is that kind of you can connect with the league on that side of things but not the team?
More so the league. A lot of the MBPA has been a big help on it. And, you know, throughout the program that I've been in, like, they, you know, provide a lot of resources for me. And so I've been able to keep in contact with certain people, you know, especially like teammates and whatnot. They've been, you know, real supportive and, you know, I'm on my side, on my back with this, the whole situation. And so, you know, like I said, the MBPA has been a big help, as well as, you know, the whole program and the resources they provide for me.
So, Jalen, as of July 1st, I believe, you can apply to the NBA for reinstatement if the league's medical director determines you've gone through the treatment and aftercare that's been prescribed. Do you intend, as of right now, to apply for reinstatement in July?
100%. No doubt.
That's great. And you feel good about where you're at in that process and your chances of being reinstated?
Oh, yeah, for sure. For sure. I have no doubt in my mind about this reinstatement process. You know, I feel very confident and very comfortable with, you know, the next steps. And, you know, I'm just preparing myself, you know, mentally, physically, you know, on the court and everything, ready for, you know, trying to get back into the league.
That's really great to hear, Jalen. I'm glad you're at that place in your process and you're confident about the summer ahead. It does bring up an interesting question, though, of you're a Scarborough shooting star. That schedule runs May 25th to August 1st. NBA Summer League is right smack in the middle of that season. Have you talked to Scarborough about, hey, what happens if I get reinstated and I can head off to Vegas for Summer League? Have you guys discussed that? Have you thought about that at all?
Yeah, you know, like I said, the staff in the front office is great. You know, I've been in great communication with Nico and Brady and, you know, Jamal McGlure, all those guys, you know, and they're real understanding about everything. And so they, you know, we talked about the situation before coming in. And so we have an understanding about, you know, everything that's going forward. And so they've been great. Like I said, real supportive of me and of my career. And so, you know, I just look forward to keep moving on with it.
Yeah, well, you were also back in Ontario, and Jamal McGlure has the affiliation with the franchise. Is, like, I've got to think mm-hmm. that part of this decision to be here is an indicator that your relationship with the Raptors is a good one. Like, are you on good terms right now with the Toronto Raptors?
Yeah, with the Raps, yeah, there's no bad, definitely no bad blood or anything. Like, you know, it's good terms. Honestly, I didn't even know Jamal was going to be here until after I signed. You know, after I signed, I found out he was going to be like the director or VP or whatever. And, you know, that just made it even better because, you know, our relationship whenever I was with the Raptors, you know, we had a great relationship, I feel like. You know, he did a good job, you know, helping me on and off the court, you know, just being there, kind of like a big brother type figure, you know, and so, or mentor type. And so, you know, like I said, our relationship is good, and, you know, I have a good relationship with the Raptors still. And so, you know, like I said, just moving on forward from there.
Jalen, you have a good relationship with Jamal, a good relationship with the Raptors. And as we, not that it was any surprise, but as we saw when you posted to your Instagram story that you were back in the city, good relationship with the fan base still that has been keeping up with you and was excited to see you back in town. How cool is that? How special is that for you that the Raptors fans have, you know, I hope for the most part supported you throughout this last year, but we're also so excited to see you back in town.
No doubt. It's great. I love that part of it. You know, that's one thing that I was kind of sad that I got to miss in Tampa, you know, actually being in Toronto and experiencing it firsthand. But even while in Tampa, you know, they showed extreme love, and, you know, I appreciate that. And since I've been back, or since I've been here, this is my first time since I've been here, it's been nothing but, you know, support and, you know, open arms. And so, you know, I definitely appreciate the fan base. You know, I think it's the greatest fan base out there. And, you know, I mean, I'm hoping moving forward that, you know, I can continue to be on their side. You know what I mean? Continue to do what I can to keep them happy. And so, like I said, it's a great community, great city to be in. And, you know, I'm glad I'm finally here.
Really excited for you to get to experience that in person. And just to put it on your radar, though, like, the people will demand a We the North on social at some point, and they're probably going to ask you to get J. Cole to say it too. So you got to have the We the North to fire everyone up.
Yeah. I'm going to have to get it back. I'm going to have to run that one back for sure.
Jalen Harris, shooting guard for the Scarborough Shooting Stars. Thanks so much for taking the time. Really looking forward to watching you at the CBL at the Sleeman Center on Thursday night against Guelph. So best of luck with the season ahead and your path back to the NBA, Jalen.
Yes, sir. I appreciate it. Thank you for having me on as well.
That was Jalen Harris, former Raptors guard, current guard for the Scarborough Shooting Stars, who will make their season debut tonight against
Guelph. Let's go!
For anyone who hasn't kept up or forgets, the situation with Jalen Harris as it pertains to the Raptors is that he is still disqualified from the NBA until July 1st, at which point he can apply for reinstatement. Should the league approve his reinstatement, the Raptors would still hold rights on him as they did before his disqualification. So check that game out tonight if you have a chance. It's going to be weird, I think, even if you're Jalen Harris, where on paper you're one of the best players in the CBL, and you look down the bench and there's J. Cole. However good or not good at basketball J. Cole might be, I would imagine if you're a young man, that's a rapper you've listened to a lot and you might be a little starstruck. My question for you guys, who is the person you would be most starstruck or nervous around? Say they got dropped into this show. Our boss hits us up. This person's a coworker tomorrow. Or Ailish, this person's playing on your line tomorrow. Or JD, this person wants to go get beers and watch a game with you. Who is your J. Cole in the CBL that you'd be most starstruck or nervous around? Ailish.
Stevie Nicks.
That's a good one.
I absolutely love Stevie Nicks. She is a queen and an idol and my favorite singer-songwriter of all time. And I would be shaken in my boots even to meet her, honestly. If I got the opportunity, I would probably just be so embarrassing. It's so nice to meet you. I get to see her live. Yep.
Have you ever seen the YouTube video of her singing Wild Heart as she's getting makeup done?
Yes.
I've watched that video more than any other YouTube video. One, like, unequivocally, like, I would stand at like whatever, the pearly gates, and they were like, answer these questions truthfully, be careful. And if that was one of the questions, was what YouTube video have you watched the most? It would. That's like a JD has too many drinks, especially during the pandemic, and has like a one friend over and is like,
feels,
fires
yeah.
up the TV and goes like, you gotta watch Stevie Nicks sing Wild Heart in the makeup chair. I also love her. I like Silver Springs is sneakily my favorite song by them. And it's just because, like, there's obviously they're an incredible band because they all slept with each other and then wrote songs about hating each other and, like, are all, like, performing together on a nightly basis. So, like, that atmosphere of them singing Silver Springs and Stevie Nicks singing it to, like, it's just, yeah, they're incredible. I will say this game is hilarious because there's so many celebrities that I would
there's so many ways to go
around.
With it. That was just the top of my mind, but I'm sure I could think some more.
Yeah, so but I'm just saying I'm with you in that. If I met Stevie Nicks, I wouldn't be cool. I wouldn't be like, oh, what's up, Stevie? You know, like, how we doing? Like, everything
what's
cool?
New?
Yeah, I wouldn't be cool around her whatsoever. Yeah, I think that just in general for this game, like, famous rock stars is a whole other level of just echelon for awkwardness. Because I just think that super famous rock stars on that level are actually so cool and have been idolized by every type of person that it's like they're desensitized to it, right? There's nothing that you can throw at somebody like that where they go, oh, that's interesting. They're just – they are better than you. You know, it's like they're – like, did you guys ever see John Mulaney's bit on writing for Mick Jagger? Not funny. This isn't resonating with you guys? Where he's like, that's how Mick Jagger talks to him. He's like, Mick Jagger doesn't talk. He doesn't use politeness. When he wants something, he just says, like, Diet Coke out loud. And then someone goes and gets him a Diet Coke. And when he didn't like any of the jokes, he would just say, not funny. And, like, that was it, shooting down Mulaney's bits. And I think that's exactly how you'd feel. Like, you're just a servant to that rock star. I will admit that I think I've told this story before, that I was incredibly starstruck meeting Curtis Joseph because he was a childhood idol. But that's where I would go with this is, like, for me, where I feel in this industry, I'll keep it to people that it's like I actually have a shot of speaking to. For me, it actually is the hardest part of the job is when you speak to people that you grew up either reading, following, or watching and adored, right? Because it's like your inner child still comes out. And I'm super glad that I have that, honestly, because I really do believe that there's like a big part of sports media culture right now, which is like, I'm a better than sports or whatever. And like, so much of it is like, okay, but were you not a fan at one point? Did you not, why did you get into this? And I think people got jaded and desensitized and whatever. And remembering what it felt like to love, like, and idolize athletes as a kid is a big reason why I think that I can relate to certain things or why certain things get frustrating or whatever. But, Curtis Joseph was a tough one for me. When we did our Matt Sundin interview,
that was awesome.
I had to think forever about how to do that properly. And if I would have screwed that up, I would have worn that for an extremely, extremely long time. But I guess to me, the way I'm interpreting this question, which is a long-winded way of saying, is like, who is the least amount of celebrity, you know what I mean, that I would be nervous around? That's my interpretation. I like Ailish's, which is like, who is the biggest celebrity? But for me, the lowest celebrity that I would be like, oh my God, I don't really know what to say to you because I'm actually enamored with you. Like, I'd be like, holy crap, would be
Gunther.
One of two. No. Detlef Schrempf. Like, I think that's a name. If I met Detlef Schrempf, I would be like, I think I'd try to talk to him about Parks and Rec, and he'd be like, yeah, everybody talks to me about Parks and Rec.
Everyone tries to be cool and not talk to him about basketball and
exactly.
talk to the other thing they know him from.
Exactly. Or I would try to be like a deep cut guy and talk to him about the Pacers, you know, like not the Sonics. I'd be like, so your Pacers years or Mavericks or Felix Potvin. Felix Potvin, I loved as like right. Cujo was my true love because I was more of a hockey fan. Felix was more of like a aesthetic, like not watching hockey every single night as a kid yet, like watching the odd game, knowing who he was. But aesthetically, like seeing him in Rock'em Sock'ems and making glove saves and seeing his gear, like I think that Felix Potvin's equipment, his setup, was the reason why I became a goalie and why I loved it. And I think if I met Felix Potvin and we were just talking, I would be a little starstruck if I met him. And it's like, yeah, I don't know. We've talked to – like we have Mark Messier coming on the next block, and I'm not as nervous for Mark Messier as I would be for a Felix Potvin interview.
I feel like the Felix Potvin one, though, you might be better if it's in person because, like, Felix Potvin, I remember him as, like, this young guy, and he looks kind of like Ziggy Sobotka from The Wire. And that's now, I don't know if you've seen a picture of him – I don't know if you've seen him recent, like a recent picture of him as a coach overseas. He does the like he's on the bench with the shirt and tie and vest and jacket. Like he looks very policeman from Peaky Blinders now, and he's got the like cop mustache goatee going on. I'd be much less starstruck seeing him now because like he looks more like a Johnny Depp character than the Felix Potvin I remember. So in person, I think it'd be a little easier.
I like how you referenced three different people he's looked
like. Yeah, I'm just throwing
they all
my
worked.
References are out of control.
But no, but they all worked. They all worked. So you're right. It's definitely one of those things, and that's the weirdness of this job. Sometimes is like you speak to people over the phone, and it's actually more nerve wracking than meeting somebody in person. Usually, you meet somebody in person, it's totally normal. There's only been two people I think I've been super awkward around in person, and it was Bobby Orr because I almost destroyed his body by accident with I let Bobby Orr into the building, and we have those little doors that open for a second and then jam closed, and he stood in the middle of the two doors as he was starting to talk to me, and I had a panic attack. I literally saw news clippings of young stupid intern breaks Bobby Orr in half, kills
you
national
shot Jeter.
Treasure. Yeah, 100% you shot Jeter moment where I was like, you got to move. I kind of yelled at him, and then I was embarrassed in the elevator because I was like, you got to come through the gates, Bobby. It was like, anyway, so that and then Cujo, when I called him Cujo to his face and I said, nice to meet you, Cujo, and immediately wanted to like bury my head in the sand like an ostrich and just not see the light of day again.
Well, we had Gretzky and we had Wickenheiser on so far in my career here. And those have been like those were really cool defining moments. Like, you know, I'm new young broadcaster on the radio and Daniele's like, oh, we're going to have Wayne Gretzky on at 8 a.m. tomorrow. I'm like, oh,
Daniele loves doing it that way, though.
He's just so casual.
I know. It's one of his moves is he likes being like not excited about the guests he pulls.
Here's the lineup tomorrow.
No, well, here's the thing.
Heroes.
He has a lot of bangers, and so he's the classic act like you've been there before guy where he never pimps a home run. His pimping of a home run is just to kind of do the quick stare down and just walk the bases casually, and that's Daniele's move.
Gunther a little bit. He was Gunther was the one guy we got in LA. He had like 45 Gunther tweets.
You're right.
He deserved it. That was an amazing pulling.
Yes, you're right. You know what? That's Daniele's. Like if he was weighing in on this, I guarantee you one of his would be like Michael Schumacher. Like, you know, like if he met Schumacher, that would be one of his. Blake, who's yours?
Yeah, I went more on the A-list.
I mean, I can tell you who Blake's was because I watched it happen live. But anyways, go on.
Yeah, I mean, look, it would have been Chris Jericho for a long time. And then I interviewed him and it was fine. I sat down with him for like 15, 20 minutes. This is the thing is like I've got to interview a lot of those people now that
Blake,
been
you
on
were
my
literally
list.
Shaking when you interviewed Edge for the first time. You were shaking.
It was also
in
my
the
first
chair.
Week on the show.
I just said, we were watching you shake as you were like, you literally did the Will Ferrell sketch of, remember when you did wrestling things and you went up on the table and jumped off and went through the table? That was awesome. Yeah. That was
Captain
you with
Insano
Edge.
Shows
time.
No mercy. In the A-list vein, and like I've gotten to talk to a bunch of musicians over the years, like through Columbia House Party and stuff like that. But Mark Hoppus would be a huge one for me.
That's
of Blink
cool.
182. Yeah. Either of the Blink. You know what? You could say Mark Hoppus, Tom DeLonge, or Travis Barker. I just like Mark Hoppus is the one I think there's the highest upside of like, if you play this right, it could be a really cool conversation. Whereas Tom, you're just going to talk about weird alien stuff. And Travis Barker, I still have never heard say like more than one sentence at a time.
No, I'd be more starstruck around Travis Barker though.
Me
out of
too.
All of the three,
well, he's a bigger
he's
star.
Married
a
Kardashian.
That's what I mean.
Right?
Is like I just
and he'd be a harder interview
Yeah.
Because he doesn't talk a lot, but Hoppus would be the one that I thought of it through like a radio lens of like,
yeah, you know, it's a good lens. I like that. It was open to interpretation. Everybody took it in their own way, and I like the way that everybody took it. Like, again, you guys, it's much better. You guys are getting to sit down with Mark Hoppus and Stevie Nicks while I sat down with Felix Potvin for these interviews, and we're all going to share our work at the end of it. But still, it's just that's the way it is.
And hey, another person who would be on this list if he weren't just such a nice guy and so easy to talk to, Mark Messier, who we'll talk to next about the Battle of Alberta. It's the Fan Morning Show, Sports at 590, The Fan.